Welcome to episode 272 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Well, better late than never, but I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to have my full podcasting studio available to me to actually do this from home today, and this is the perfect episode to be back.
Yes, 8-2, the Seahawks defeat the San Francisco 49ers on one of the more memorable games of the 2019 season, and that's just not for Seahawks fans, that's for all NFL fans. Now, I see Thursday Night Football trying to take the spotlight with Myles Garrett trying to attack the Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph. But I'm not going to let that overtake what we saw on Monday night as one of the best games of the season.
Yeah, that was an amazing game. It was really fun. You saw some great defense, some hard hitting, some great offense along the way, some bad offense along the way. Special teams was a little bit all over the map. Great plays, brilliant plays, giant mistakes. It had all the things, much better than the game that happened around this time last year. Chiefs Rams, that everybody said was the greatest Monday Night Football game that's ever been played, which just featured a track meet and guys running up and down the field catching touchdowns. This is much closer to the best Monday Night Football game that you could hope for.
Well, and it was the defense that kept both of these teams in the game at key moments, because early on in this game, Adam, it looked like the Seahawks were they were just going to get run over by the 49ers. They kicked a field goal. Their rookie kicker starts off with a 43-yard field goal, a 10-yard pass by Jimmy Garoppolo to put the 49ers up in the first quarter, 10-0. And at that point, Russell Wilson wasn't really moving the ball with the offense. You kind of had to expect that it was coming at some point. They weren't allowing, the 49ers were getting enough pressure, but they weren't, it was all coming from up the middle. We saw Joey Hunt get absolutely destroyed early on, but really that was probably his one negative play that really stood out. Other than that, it was coming from when whoever decided not to block, whether it was Mikey Potty or DJ Fluker or, guys just coming unblocked at Russell Wilson.
Yeah, early in the game, it did feel like that the Seahawks were just going to get blown out. And it's not just because they were playing the San Francisco 49ers, they were also playing the refs. Like, that was what was unbelievably infuriating regarding the first quarter and a half. I mean, you go back and you look at that, and that first drive of the 49ers, that was completely gifted to them because of the refs. And you look at that first drive, and whether it's the pass interference on Trey Flowers early in that drive, or the pass interference they called on Jamar Taylor for accidentally grazing the receiver with his hand that wiped out the Shaquille Griffin interception.
Was it that bad? Was Jamar Taylor's holding that insignificant? Because when I saw it happen live,
freaking tripped.
It looked like he pulled Flowers. It looked like Taylor tripped and dragged the dude down, is what I remember in my mind.
Negative. That was a joke show of a call. And then what made that was, in real time though, you're kind of like, okay, I guess that's how we're calling the game today.
Right.
Don't breathe on a receiver. That's fine. But then the subsequent Seahawks possession, it comes up to third down and Russ tries to throw a back shoulder to DK Metcalf, and the DB literally runs dead into his chest,
right,
never turns around far before the ball gets there, and the ref swallows his whistle. And this is how this whole thing went throughout the first quarter and a half. And that really allowed the 49ers to get out to that 10-0 lead. And then later on, they still tried to screw us later in the game too, which we'll get to. But once the refs started to get it closer to being a more fair fight, then you saw the Seahawks respond, get a few stops. Russell Wilson gets the offense to start to show some life. And you go into halftime, or just before halftime, thinking, hell, we could end up being up 14-10 here.
Well, the 49ers definitely needed some help from somewhere, because they weren't getting it from their two tackles, because Jadeveon Clowney was absolutely wrecking this game early on, and he was a big reason why the Seahawks even pulled within a field goal of the 49ers early in this game.
Coleman empties out to the right side wide. Empty backfield for Garoppolo, who stands strong. Gets hit. Ball is out. Ball is picked up. Clowney goes the other way. He's in. Touchdown. Seahawks! Garoppolo fumbles the ball. Reed forces it with a sack, strips the ball, and Clowney, I hope he's got in his contract money for points, his second touchdown on the season. A fumble recovery for a touch, and the Seahawks are within a point away of only trailing the Niners by three.
Steve Rabel, Seahawks Radio Network, and a little Dave Wyman chuckle there at the end.
Yeah, the Wyman chuckles. Love that. Now, Rabel obviously doesn't know that he doesn't have a points for money clause in his contract, but those points are certainly going to pay dividends coming up here when he's a free agent this offseason, and those points will certainly turn into money for Clowney. But yes, Clowney was definitely a game wrecker throughout the game, really had his way with either tackle. But really, I mean, let's not lose sight of Puna Ford and Jaron Reed up front. I mean, they were super disruptive in this game. And Jaron Reed, he's the guy who forces the fumble on Garoppolo, and allowing Clowney to kind of get the glory on that. But man, those guys really, even on the interior, gave the 49ers offensive line fits. This is what we had kind of envisioned, you know, early on in the season. Well, once we get Reed back and, you know, Clowney, and then the ghost of Ziggy Ansah and, you know, some of these other guys back, like, you know, we could have some semblance of a pass rush. And it was there. And I guess I didn't expect to see it in this game because we've had those guys back for a couple. You know, Pete keeps saying, oh, we're going to turn a corner. And it's like, yeah, okay, well, I'm not seeing it. And I was pleasantly surprised. It was the number one difference maker in this game for us.
And Clowney gets the NFC Defensive Player of the Week honors for that dominant performance. Brian Baldinger called it the most dominant performance he's seen from a defensive lineman this season. And man, that dude really was all over the place. And we saw that it really was Clowney. It wasn't that the tackles were playing bad. They were coming into this game injured. McGlinchey and Staley, both questionable with their injuries going into this game. And
well, they weren't questionable. They were questionable coming back from their injuries. It's not like they were injured the week before. Like, they'd been healing up for some time now. Now, whether or not do you want to trot them out there with the risk of re-injuring, they were healthy. Don't sit there and try to act like they weren't. Now, if you want to say rusty,
yeah,
I'll give you that. But they weren't hurt. Okay.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. But still, they were doing fine when they were going up against just about anybody else not named Clowney. We saw Ansah in there for his 13 snaps. He got one pressure. We got to see Shaquem Griffin out on the edge, and he didn't provide much pressure. But at least I knew the difference between the two, that one of them was trying.
Yeah, it definitely seems there's a difference in energy level between Ansah and, you know, Keem. So I would like to see Keem get some more opportunities. I think he earned it with his motor in that game, and that was a big deal. But the Seahawks did blitz a bit too. I mean, we saw Trey Flowers get in on the sack parade there throughout the game. I mean, early in the game.
Yeah, it was early on in the game where Trey Flowers came off the edge. And then, you know, while we're talking about sacks, you mentioned Puna Ford, Jaron Reed get in there. It was part of the reason Clowney was part of that sack too, because he was the one that flushed Garoppolo up in the pocket into the arms of Reed and Ford.
Second down and six at the Seattle 37. Coleman stays in the backfield. Garoppolo takes a shotgun snap. He's missed. Now he's hit. Now he goes down. Clowney got there first, got a hand on him, forced him up in the pocket. And then Puna Ford and Jaron Reed got there. They'll probably split that sack. Doesn't matter. It is still another sack going for the Seahawks defense. That would be the Seattle third sack on the game and a loss of 5 yards.
So there's a little bit of the chicken and the egg thing when it comes to pass rush and secondary, right? And, you know, I'm not sure that it was just the idea that the defensive line played a great game and all of a sudden they were able to generate pressure when they couldn't have before. Because I do believe the secondary played a lot better in this game. And I think that's a story that went underappreciated throughout the week. I mean, what a difference a starting safety tandem makes. I mean, McDougal broke up a couple big plays, you know, after the receiver would have caught the ball, you know, busting some chops. And then we get to see the debut of Diggs. And I'll tell you straight up, I'm already in love with this guy. I'm in football love with this guy. I love the way that he hits. I mean, there was a couple times, there was a pass late in the second half that Garoppolo tries to float over the linebackers and drop it into Juszczyk. And Diggs comes in and just almost cams him out of the picture.
Right.
Like he just blows him up. And this is what we've been missing from the secondary. There was a fear in the receivers late in the game. That's why all the drop passes began to happen. Not because Emmanuel Sanders got injured. If Niners fans want to keep making excuses like that, then that's fine. But that's not the reason. Like, Emmanuel Sanders didn't make the other guys like catch better. Okay. Like, they became afraid of our starting safeties throughout the game. And
that was one of the things that we saw in the first half, right? Was that everything over the middle was open. And a part of that was because they were so focused on stopping the run. And so they were running all those slant passes. Well, when you're running slants and you have dudes over the middle that can thump you, then you start to get worried. Yeah, all those passes that were gimmies early on in the game maybe aren't gimmies later on in the game.
Well, and give Ken Norton some credit, too. There was an adjustment made early and quickly.
Yeah.
Because those first two drives, like you said, the slant, boom, 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 just killing us with that because we were selling out with the linebackers to come up and stop the run, which they did phenomenally all game long against the number one rushing defense or offense in the league. And look, that's something we can hang our hat on now. Like, we've been kind of talking about it, them being good against the run. But again, lesser teams, what do we really have here? That I can say for sure is not going to fade throughout this season. That is something we will do well. And once they did that and the Niners countered by hitting the quick slants, Ken Norton switches to a little more zone.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden that shut down. And now Jimmy Garoppolo didn't know how to play left-handed at that point. You know, you took away his one thing.
Yeah.
And then he was flustered. And then combined that with a couple drops and pretty sticky coverage overall. And then the defensive line was able to get home. It all works together. And then the defense playing as well as it did set up the offense for pretty much every single score and made it possible for us to come away with the victory on the road.
And it really was the defense of the Seahawks that set up the offense for scores in this game. After Jimmy Garoppolo floats it over the head of Kendrick Bourne, he gets his hand on it, but it was definitely too high. It goes into the hands of Quandre Diggs. He gets a 44-yard interception return. And from there, the Seahawks go and punch it into the end zone because they're already in the red zone. It ends up Jacob Hollister, Russell Wilson's new favorite target inside the red zone with the touchdown.
So here we go, first and goal for Russ and company. Play fake. He's going to half roll right side, still looking. Throws back inside. Ball is tipped up. Is it caught? It is. It's caught in the back of the end zone by Hollister. Touchdown, Seahawks. Jacob Hollister reaches up with one hand as he's falling backwards. And Russ lays a little dime over the top for Hollister to catch. And the Seahawks have taken the lead 13-10.
Oh, that wasn't for Hollister to catch, although he caught it. That was for Tyler Lockett. In talking about the referees being just kind of a joke show throughout this whole game, they full on tackled Tyler Lockett,
yeah,
who that pass was intended for, and no flag. I was already screaming at the screen before Hollister makes the Tyree catch,
yeah,
pinning it to his helmet, which good for him. I've been kind of lukewarm on the guy saying, well, I need to see something first. Breakout game for him. Kudos to Jacob Hollister. Definitely a different receiving threat than Luke Wilson at this point.
He was the guy who was potentially going to catch the game winner in overtime as well. But Russell Wilson just coming up short on that pass. A great play by linebacker Greenlaw for the 49ers.
Yep. Tried to drop it in the turkey hole. And
that was a turkey hole pass.
That was a turkey hole pass. And look, Russ underthrew it just the slightest bit. Like, it was a really good throw still. Like, if you're rating it on a scale of 1 to 10, the throw was a 7, 7.5. It was a really good throw. Just Greenlaw made it a great interception for a linebacker, because as a quarterback, when you're watching that, when you see the nameplate of the defender,
yeah,
pointing at your face, you throw that rock every time.
Uh-huh.
That's what you do.
And he somehow spun around and was able to get both hands on it while leaping. He was at least 15 inches in the air.
Yeah, absolutely. That was just a spectacular play by Greenlaw. So give him credit. It was tough to watch.
While we're giving players on the 49ers credit for great plays, how about that play by Jaquaski Tartt to strip DK Metcalf as Metcalf's rumbling, trying to make a play, trying to get in the end zone. And just Tart comes in and he's wrestling the ball away. People are complaining because he was out of bounds during the process of trying to strip him. But by the time he gets back in bounds, gets control of the football, rips it out at about the 2 yard line, and a pretty incredible play by Tart.
Yeah, Jaquiski Tart did make a great play there. I give that more to Tart than I do blame on DK Metcalf there, because, man, he catches that ball and just goes full on wide receiver beast mode.
Yeah.
Like, it was incredible. And he really had a great grip on that football as he was getting torn to the ground. And I mean, it took two hands by Tart to rip it out of DK's one mitt, and he still gave it a hell of a fight. So I really don't put a lot on DK on that. Now, I think this is a good segue to fumbles.
Yeah.
Stop it. I am so sick of the fumbles. I mean, I'm not going to pick on one running back or the other because they both had their fumbles, but I'm sick and tired of running back fumbles. And I get a little more positive out of Carson than I do Penny. He gets two carries and coughs it up, you know, once. That's a 50% rate. That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Whereas at least with Carson, it's more like a 15% rate, but both are terrible. And I'm sick and tired of it. This game, we should have dominated this game. Like, that's how it felt going back and rewatching it. Like, we're up 11 at the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And well, then Russ fumbled.
That was another fumble, but it didn't have anything to do with the running back. It had to do with Russell Wilson, who was also getting face masked on the play, coughs up the football. It ends up in the hands of a Fetty, who two fumbles on one play. Russell Wilson fumbled it into the arms of a Fetty, and then a Fetty tries to go Jerome Bettis with it, and he gets the ball punched out, and the 49ers are able to go in for the score.
All right. Efetti is getting panned unfairly for this. Like, number one, he didn't just take the ball away from Russell.
No. Okay? And that's why I was careful in trying to say that.
I know
that
you
It was fumbled into the arms of Efetti.
Yes, I know. I know you understand that, but there's a lot of people who don't.
Oh, a lot of and initially to me, it looked like Efetti went in there to rip the ball away from Russ trying to make a play.
Yeah, no. And it did in real live time. It does look that way. But in reality, the ball was fumbled into his hands. Now, and then the other thing is everybody's, you know, screaming at Efetti for fumbling it the second time. Well, he had the ball for approximately, what, 3/4 of a second?
Yeah.
Second and a quarter? I don't even know
if he had about enough time to decide that he had the football. And then by the time, you know, he had another split second to hopefully make the decision to go down, it was getting punched out.
Right. I mean, the only critique I would have is once the ball's in your arms, fall to the ground, you're an offensive lineman.
Right.
But again, the amount of time he had to process that information was very, very little.
Right.
Like, that was a quick second that he had the ball in his hand. But God, what a swing in the game. I was stomping around the hotel room. I'm surprised security didn't come up. I'm walking on chairs like, oh, you can't believe this just happened. Like, we're looking to actually take control of this game. And being up 11, the offense seemed to get it kind of flowing, and then that happened. That was a very frustrating play.
Well, and all the momentum from the game just went away. The 49ers able to convert on the two-point attempt, so now it's within a field goal. The Seahawks get the ball back. They go 3 and out. You know, Richard Sherman deflects a pass to DK Metcalf on third down that would have kept that drive going, and then they get the ball back and drive down the field, get the field goal, and tie it up.
And the subsequent drive by the Seahawks goes 3 and out. But the third down play on that, it's the second to the last drive for the Seahawks. DK Metcalf on third down, he gets another target, and the receiver mows into him again, and again, no flag. Never turns around, face guards him, puts his hands all over him, no flag.
Yeah, the corner. None. The corner runs right into him.
Yeah, what a joke show that was. So, goes back to the Niners. Throw three consecutive passes, which Kyle Shanahan, you know, he gets panned a little for that. And he also does it at the end of overtime. And we can talk about that later on there. But Seahawks end up with the ball once again. Right on the last drive, come down, and don't they tie it up? Oh, boy, I'm getting... game.
Yeah, it was a seesaw game. So the 49ers, they have the ball. They tie it up 21-21. The Seahawks get the ball back with 6 minutes left on the clock still. And they go on their one of those 4.5 minute drives where they move it, you know, kind of slowly down the field. Probably their best drive of the game, where they start on their 25. They get it to the San Francisco 27, I think. Yeah. They're on 3rd and 1. Chris Carson not able to pick up that 1 yard. Like, he got that 1 yard for the touchdown early on, right? Where you're
and two other short yardage third down situations where he got it on third down.
Yeah.
So basically, if you're looking at it, just so that we're clear, on 3rd and short situations or goal line situations, you gave Carson a crack at it 4 times. He was successful 3 times. That's a really good percentage. That's 75%. Can we please stick with that rather than earlier in the game where it's a 3rd and short, 3rd and a half a yard, and we roll Russell out on one of those predictable little bootlegs, getting cute. We get cute in the end zone, and it happens to work out to Hollister. Just pound it down their
catfish
throat. Now, we tried it there. It didn't work. That's fine. Like, but overall, it was successful.
Yeah. And it was a Jadeveon Clowney fumble recovered by Puna Ford that brought on that Chris Carson touchdown that put the Seahawks up 21-10. But yeah, to get back to the end of the game situation, and you know, and on 4th and 2, there's a timeout by the 49ers. The Seahawks, you know, Pete Carroll thinks about it, brings the offense back onto the field. He ends up calling timeout before Jason Myers. In that situation, Adam, you would just run it on 3rd and short with Chris Carson. It got stuffed.
Right.
It's 4th and 2. There's 1:50 left on the clock.
Yeah.
Are you thinking, because you're on the road, you're against the 49ers. Mm-hmm. Minute 50 left on the clock. Aren't you saying, you know, why don't we go for it here and finish this game? Because that was one of the things that happened in the Rams game, is that they got in that situation. They just couldn't finish. And even if you end up kicking a field goal after another series, you still kind of want to finish in that situation and just not leave them with any time left on the clock.
Well, you got to remember, too, that the defense had played phenomenally in the second half.
Yeah.
And Jimmy looked totally rattled. I mean, hell, he tries to end the game on the subsequent drive twice.
He did. Right? Yeah, one pass to Trey Flowers that goes off his fingertips. He had KJ Wright have a pass
and
off
then Bobby Wagner, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I mean, he tries to end of the game for us, but I'm believing in my defense at that point. We've got Jimmy G on his heels. They can't run the ball. Kyle Shanahan looks like he's out of answers. And yes, I'm kicking the field goal there. I agreed with the decision in real time.
I just wanted to be clear, because it was a question for me, because there was still so much time left on the clock. But I agree that with the defense playing as well as it had. Now, if it were earlier on the season when we weren't getting any kind of pass rush, and
in that game,
sure,
where it didn't look like they could stop anything. But in the second half, they really had figured it out.
And Jason Myers gets the 46-yard field goal, puts him up, and now they're up by 3. And not only that, not only does Garoppolo look rattled, but they had Chase McLaughlin, the rookie kicker back there, who had just been lights out all day, like nailing everything down the middle. And ultimately, even with that play, the 47-yarder with 6 seconds left on the clock, again, he just nails it right down the middle.
Yeah, he did. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, how is it that we have kicker problems and, like, they can go out and find some dude who was collecting garbage or something the week before who just ice water in his veins? That's what I'm feeling at that point.
A guy who the Los Angeles Chargers passed on.
Right.
Who they've been having kicker problems forever. And this was a dude they had on their team.
Yeah. Now, look, I will say that I realized one thing during that, and that was I'd been sitting down for every field goal. And then on big plays towards the end of the game and certainly throughout overtime, I stood up and we had a lot more success. So when it came down to the game winner that he attempted in overtime, I stood up and then the shankopotamus came out.
Then how about for the Seahawks? They get the ball after the missed field goal attempt by the 49ers. 3 minutes left on the clock. Chris Carson picks up 8 yards on two consecutive runs. DK Metcalf, again, has, and this is one where you can't necessarily blame the defense. DK Metcalf had it in his hands on the sideline. It was pretty good coverage, but that's a catch that DK Metcalf has to make right at the 2 minute warning. And with 1:57 left on the Seahawks, they're on their 45 yard line right about midfield. And then they decide to punt it with under 2 minutes left.
Yeah, that was a little nerve wracking. And no timeouts at that point.
No timeouts.
I believe there's no timeouts.
No timeouts.
And then Kyle, this is the part of the game where a lot of people that are Niners fans are kind of wringing their hands about. Shanahan comes out and throws the ball three times. Well, everybody, well, why would you do that? You play for the tie. Like, what in the hell are you talking about?
Who plays the for last a tie?
The last thing in the world I want my head coach to do is play for a freaking tie. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
I would rather take a loss than a tie.
And they nearly had the play to keep that drive alive. That if Shaq Griffin doesn't make that play on that deep pass to Deebo Samuel, that could have won the game, let alone keep the drive alive.
His makeup speed on that, Shaq's,
yeah,
was very impressive. I was chalking that up as a completion as the ball hangs in the air, right?
Mm-hmm.
Deebo had what looked like about two steps on him.
He was open.
Somehow closes the distance, Shaq does, and then not just gets one hand on it, but he gets two hands on it.
Yeah.
Hurts himself a little when he lands, but...
right on his elbow.
Yeah.
One guy that I want to give credit to, before the Chase McLaughlin 47-yard field goal, we mentioned the Russell Wilson interception by Greenlaw. That run back by Greenlaw was saved. It was saved
by Dwayne Brown.
If Dwayne Brown does not make that tackle, that game could be over. Greenlaw maybe takes that all the way to the house.
Yeah, I was watching the replay today, and that was something that stuck out to me, was Dwayne Brown's effort there. And I definitely want to call that out. I'm glad that you brought it up, because yes, that's a game-saving play. Stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet.
Okay, so Dwayne Brown, he saves that play, but you know, that play, it didn't even necessarily need to happen, because Russell Wilson at midfield, you know, it's second and 10, and Russell Wilson makes a great play to scramble, get upfield, and I think he would have been near the first down, but the officials, again, they call Russell Wilson in the grasp by Eric Armstead, and it goes in the books as a sack.
What in the hell were they thinking calling that? I mean, would they have called that, you know, on Eli Manning in the Super Bowl on the Tyree catch? Like, can you imagine that they would have wiped out that moment in Super Bowl history if they would have called Eli in the grasp? Like, and Russell was, quote unquote, less in the grasp of the defender there. He avoids the sack, scoots forward for about 3 or 4 yards, keeps it in a manageable situation. But no, they call in the grasp and the ball comes back, drive over. Just what a joke. The officials were bad in this game. I'm not one to bitch about officials. I'm not. Unless they are really atrocious. And they were terrible in this game.
It was so bad that even in a win, we're complaining about the officiating as how bad it was.
Yes.
But then on the very next play, it led to one of the a great play in the game. Russell Wilson to Malik Turner picks up the first down.
Empty backfield, four-man rush. Russ going to try to run around the right side. Does find some room. Now he throws. Got Nurt. Turner makes the catch. Spins out of a tackle. Down to the 35-yard line, the 33-yard line. How did Malik Turner do that? Made the catch. Spun out of a tackle. Picked up positive yards. A first down and then some. A 20-plus yard gain. As they spot the ball, we'll actually see how far it was. 29 yards and a first down at the San Francisco 32.
Let's talk a little bit about what Russ did in overtime and with whom he did it with. We're talking Tyler Lockett out with apparently a bruise that like was scary, like to the point to where people were like saying amputation. Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, he had to go to the hospital and he stayed there overnight. I hadn't heard amputation.
Yeah, Dr. David Chow came out and he's like, I've heard people saying this because they Googled compartmental bruising thingy, you know, and your WebMD comes up and it's like, oh, yeah, sometimes ends up in amputation. And of course, now people lose their crap, right?
Right.
So fortunately, none of that stuff. Like, he's doing okay.
Yeah.
Like Tyler's fine.
But it sounds like he's going to be back for the next game too, against the Eagles.
He does it in overtime with DK Metcalf, Malik Turner, and as Colin Cowherd put it, a thing called Jacob Hollister. and that's who he goes in. And Josh Gordon, who's been there for less than a cup of coffee.
Yeah, Josh Gordon picking up two key third downs on this game.
Yeah, and looks like he's going to be able to play and be a guy that really does help this passing attack. But it doesn't really matter because Russ does it with anybody. Like, I hear Niners fans whining all about how, well, we didn't have George Kittle, and we lost Emmanuel Sanders. How is Jimmy ever supposed to complete a pass? And it's like, who cares, bud? You're a great quarterback? It doesn't matter. You know, just take a look at your counterpart in the division, the greatest quarterback in your division by far. It doesn't matter if we put out your grandma out there, Russell Wilson will make him look great.
Yeah, and if he's not making one of those guys look great, he's just taking it himself.
Russ has to get the ball out of his hands. No, he's got running room. 45, midfield, first down, slides down, is run into from behind after he's on the ground, but he's across the 40-yard line. Huge opening on the right side for Russell Wilson, and he picks up 20 and a first down.
Give Russell the ball for a third time in overtime. It has to be the charm, right?
It had to be. It was. And he gets him down there into field goal range, and Myers comes through.
At the 45, waits for the snap. Michael Dixon puts it down. That kick is away, and that kick is good! The Seahawks win! It's good! From 42, the Seahawks in overtime win for the second time in 2 weeks, and they beat the undefeated, now once defeated, San Francisco 49ers. What a game on Monday Night Football. The Seahawks win in overtime, and Jason Myers does it. What a game.
I really wish Rabel would have said the now defeated 49ers instead of once defeated. Just taking that out just as a little dig, you know. But good on Jason Myers for making the kick. Not once, but twice. Made it a little easier the first time. The second one was a little more butt-clenching. Yeah. But he made it. And then you see the celebration by Russ and Pete and the way the team lifts up Jason Myers. And this is the type of victory that can propel a team going down the stretch, especially when they have such a difficult schedule coming up. And I mean, you get this big divisional win against the big bad Niners that everybody, including the announcers throughout the game, wanted to crown.
Yep.
And it feels so good. It's a huge win. It was victory cigar time, and I was exhausted and I did nothing.
Instead of going into the bye week with the lasting images of Robert Saleh flexing on the sidelines,
Can we talk about this for a second? This is something that's very important to me and I wanted to bring up. Uh-huh. Okay. Has there ever been an assistant coach ever that the national media has wanted to make a head coach more than Robert Saleh?
Rob Ryan.
No. Nope.
He's the last they one who's in close.
Love with Robert Saleh. I thought for a minute, I got confused. I thought he was the head coach of the 49ers. That is ridiculous, excessive, and it's a little gross. And I thought I was the only one to like notice and like really like think it was that bad and that offended by it. But Then I heard Peter King talk about it. From Monday Morning Quarterback or whatever his new column is called, Monday Football Mornings in America. That's what it is. And he went off on it. He said that was disgusting, disrespectful. And he's like, and then the Seattle defense is causing havoc. And what? We can't get a shot at Ken Norton to save our life.
Was Ken Norton even at the game on Monday night?
I didn't even know there was a Ken Norton on our team. But good God, they are in love with Robert Saleh. And it is disgusting.
It's a little over the top. Like once in a while, like when they make a good play, like I can kind of see it. Like, but every single time Robert Saleh is over on the sidelines.
Yeah. Either flexing or thumping his chest or jumping up and down or showing his perfect smile. Like I just can't believe how, and this is not the first time, right? No. I've watched some 49ers game in the past and the camera is glued to him.
I thought we were going to get our own little Robert Saleh box in the bottom right corner of the screen.
Saleh cam. Yeah. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. That was a joke show.
Oh, another thing that was a little bit of a joke show was some of the commentary after the game. Scott in Chicago writes in, says, that was a fun game. Did you see the article that in the overtime coin flip that Smith called tails and it flipped to heads and we chose to keep the ball? During the game and all the videos, I heard him call heads. These 40 Winer fans are outright ridiculous. What's your thoughts?
Well, okay. So when I heard it in real time, I legit was like, I think he says heads. Like, I really, truly do. And it absolutely sounds like heads. And let me tell you why it was absolutely heads. He says heads. The ref says the call on the field is heads. Gino doesn't freak out. Sherm doesn't freak out.
Richard Sherman is the guy opposite of Gino Smith in this situation.
Right. Right. So if he had called tails and the ref had said, the call on the field is heads. Can you imagine Sherm just sitting there calm and serene being like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's great. He called the opposite of what Gino called. This is great. This is wonderful. I hope they have a great coin flip. Do you think that's how Sherman reacts? Because that's the way that he reacted.
Yeah.
Like, it was no freaking big deal. Okay?
Well, and Gino Smith, if that is what happens, Gino Smith's the coolest dude in the world, because as soon as the ref says heads, we want the ball. Like, and plays it straight face the whole time.
Yeah. So if Gino had called tails and then the ref says it's heads and it takes Sherm even a second to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And the coin is flipped and the ref says, oh, it's heads. You think Sherm's just going to sit there and not say a word and just be like, oh, okay, I guess I take the ball. All you people that think you heard tails, dead ass wrong. Get your hearing checked. I'm deaf as hell. I grew up underneath an airport. Like, literally, my room was the last thing that the airplanes flew over before they landed. It was always loud. I work in a sawmill. It's loud as hell in there. I can't hear
catfish.
All right. And it was clear as the day is long, heads. And if you can't hear that, you got problems.
Well, Geno Smith added to the controversy by saying what he really said in that moment was hails.
Yeah, and good for him for having a great sense of humor. Yeah. That was funny. This is a great tweet by your backup. And yeah, I mean, and that's the tradition of the backup quarterback in Seattle, right? You got to go out there and win those coin tosses. Like, T-Jack was great at it.
Gino's the new T-Jack.
Right.
Well, this is one of the emails that I've just been waiting for days and days and days to read to you, Adam, because this came in before the game against the 49ers. And it's from Jason, who may not still be listening to the show after the win Monday night. Says, Adam and Brandon, my wife recently overheard me listening to your show, and she had a puzzled look on her face. She looked at me bewildered and asked, is that a Seahawks podcast? I replied, yes. Again puzzled, she asked, why are you listening to a Seahawks podcast? I smiled, know thy enemy. She shook her head and walked away. Yes, I am a 49ers fan who has listened to the show for years, although the last few years have been difficult with the Niners not holding up their end of the proper rivalry. My favorite episode to date is the episode following Super Bowl 49.
Catfish!
For you. Yesterday, I listened to the most recent episode, and I found Adam's assessment of the Niners to be overly confident. Adam made the same argument my non-Niner fan friends make. The 49ers haven't played any good teams yet. Could one not make the same argument about the Seahawks? What quote-unquote good teams have the Seahawks beaten? Now, I'm not guaranteeing a Niners victory tomorrow, and I do think the Seahawks are still a good team, but the Seahawks defense is not what it once was. And just based on what I hear from the TV speakers, the Seahawks faithful are not nearly as loud at home games as they used to be.
Boo, not true. And we're going to get into this Santa Clara fan thing at the stadium, too. Like, we're going to put a pin in that.
The reduction in home crowd noise may have contributed to the Seahawks' 2 home losses. You both seem like nice guys, despite being Seahawk fans. I hope you are both well. My prediction for tomorrow night, Niners 28, Seahawks 24. Go Niners. Best wishes, Jason.
Go Hawks, Jason. Do appreciate your email, though. And actually, you seem like a fine fellow yourself, other than the defecting character of being a 49ers fan.
He listens to the show, though, although he is a freeloader if he's been listening since Super Bowl 49.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't expect a fan of a rival team to, be one of the little flockers. That's okay. That's all right. I'm not even mad.
If he's been listening that long, he's obviously getting something from the show.
He's getting some value in some way.
Yeah.
Well, he should also have taken notice from the pod previous to this that neither of us felt confident in this game whatsoever. I'm pretty sure I ripped the defense up and down in the last pod, and then also ripped the play calling when I thought it was soft and we wouldn't get away with that crap against good teams, which pretty much proved itself out because we didn't do that soft crap for the most part. We actually did what I would hoped we'd do, and that's cram it down the other team's throat, despite tendencies. Now, I did see some comments regarding the play calling rant that I went on last week. Uh-huh. And they're saying, well, the Bucs are a bad pass defense, and so you play into that and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's fine, and I would accept that if we hadn't have done it against everybody for the last year and a half to this point. Okay.
Yeah.
Like that's the problem. It's not that they just did that to play into the Bucs' poor pass defense. Like they've been doing that crap, and it's annoying. Since the play that shall not be talked about, Mr. Jason, you know, in the 49er land, bringing that up.
Yeah.
We've been doing that for years. So yes, the Seahawks needed to change their game plan a little bit. They did. The defense stepped up in a big way, which I don't think either of us thought would, and came out in a hard fought victory on the road against a division opponent that couldn't be beaten. And I'd like to think we weren't too cocky about it.
No, I don't think so. I like the idea that we were overly confident. And yet now the quote unquote good teams that the Seahawks have beaten include the San Francisco 49ers.
Well, I don't know. They haven't beaten any good teams, so maybe they're not a good team. So we still haven't beaten any good teams.
You know what? If that's the case, then I'm fully acceptant of that.
But a half game separates these two teams. Both teams have difficult schedules going down the stretch. And boy, I sure do like our chances with a quarterback with MVP type credentials like Russell Wilson than the crybaby catfish, Jimmy Garoppolo, who got scurred and started spraying the ball over the field. Because that was our big thing coming into this game. I didn't say for sure if we stopped the run, Jimmy couldn't beat us. I said, I just didn't know if that's something he could do. Yeah. And it's something I needed to see. And clearly, he can.
The one argument that I will give 49ers fans is, if he does have George Kittle, it's probably a little bit different. Now, because George Kittle is probably the best player on their team. But they didn't have him, and they got the L. And so we're going to have to see now, week 17, if Kittle can be healthy then.
Sure.
But the way the defense was playing, I saw a lot more out of Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. Yeah, they had their drop passes. You know, we've talked about it over and over. How does this defense get better? How do they get a pass rush? And they have, because they have all the pieces, all the parts are there. It's whether it's just trusting one another enough or what it is, but everything came together in this game.
Yeah, it did. I mean, you heard Pete talk a lot about, you know, turning that corner. We're close. We just need to, you know, get our fits in better order. I don't know exactly what you know, was going to be the difference, but whatever it was, they seemed to have found it.
Yeah.
And this defense looked a lot closer to the defense that we had hoped for going into this season with all the names that are on it. Now, let's go back to the comment about the fans. Okay. This is something I really want to talk about.
Yeah.
Because the announcers just couldn't get out of their own way to talk about how loud the 49ers fans were.
Yeah.
And how they really showed up in droves for this Monday night game and how that fan base just deserves it. No, they don't. They don't deserve it. That Fairweather fan base does not deserve it. You know why they don't deserve it? Because they don't show up when they suck ass. And they've been sucking ass for the past like 5 years. Like, and that I can remember playing in that stadium over the last few years with that thing half sold out and a lot of the fans not showing up because it's just too hot on one side of the stadium.
Well, it goes back to the game that I was at last year. The people who were in the standing room only seats that were right behind us, they were getting upset at us because we were standing because there were people in front of us standing. So you have fans there that don't understand that sometimes people at a game stand up and that when that happens, if you buy standing room only seats, there are going to be times where you can't see and you can't blame it on the people in the last row in front of you for standing up. And so I'm glad that now 49ers fans are starting to understand that when you're at a football game and it's exciting, you're allowed to get up and stand up out of your seat.
Correct. And look, regarding Seattle fans and it not being as noisy in the clink as it used to be, quote unquote. Number one, good luck proving that. Because I don't find that to be true, and I've been to a few games in the recent past.
Basing it off your TV speakers is not the way to go.
No, and then secondly, on top of all that, you want to know how I know that the crowd noise probably hasn't gotten a lot less? Because the games are still sold out. Like, even when the team's bad, the games are still sold out, and people show up.
Wait. When has the team been bad?
Oh, we'd have to go back to Mora, but, like, you know what I'm talking about. Like,
yeah.
Even in the down years, you know, the stadium is always sold out. It's not half empty like
right.
Candlestick or Blue Jean Stadium.
Well, thanks once again to Jason.
I know. That might have been mean to Jason, but I appreciate the email.
It's for all the 49ers fans that are listening, not just Jason.
No, so like I would give
Jason's one of the cool ones.
I would give him credit because he's talking about how like the Niners haven't held up their bargain over the last few years. Clearly still a fan, clearly still watching the games. But the majority of that fan base just evaporates the second that they're not even close to in contention. You know, like it's pathetic. They're a pathetic fan base.
Well, another person who we've recognized frequently as pathetic on the show from week to week. I'm afraid we're going to have to go back to the well again with Pete Prisco.
La 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 la, la 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 la, Prisco's World. La 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 la, la 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 la, Prisco's World. Prisco has his hot tastes and nothing more. That's Prisco's World.
Did we lose Pete? Because last time we talked about Pete and we had visited Prisco's World as if his reality had collided with actual reality and he was back. But Is he gone again? Is he off the reservation?
Well, this is really interesting. And I normally don't go to power rankings because the only power rankings you need to really take note of is the final
division
ones.
Standings.
The division standings and then the standings at the end of the season at who's hoisting the Lombardi. But this could not go unrecognized because after he was in full support as Russell Wilson for MVP, I thought he was fully on board. We'd never have to go back to Prisco's World again.
Mm-hmm.
But he's resorted to some other catfishery, I think, with Seahawks fans.
Or reverted.
Yes, because in his power rankings this week on CBS Sports, he had San Francisco after they lost the game. He had the 49ers as his number one team in the NFL, which last unbeaten team. First time, in fact, that the Seahawks franchise has taken down the last unbeaten team in the NFL. I think that's kind of cool.
That's interesting.
But San Fran, so they fall from 1 to 3 in the power rankings. Now, the Seattle Seahawks were at number 6 last week. Where do you suppose they end up on Pete Prisco's power rankings this week after defeating the 8-0 49ers?
I actually know the answer to this, but I was appalled by it. Somehow they became number 7.
They were at number 6 last week, and they fall from 6 to 7 and are now a slot below the 3-loss Minnesota Vikings in Pete Prisco's power rankings.
Right. Yeah, with Captain Kirk.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's hard to fathom. And again, it's tough to get too upset over power rankings because they are kind of a trivial matter.
But how do you watch that game and legitimately think that that's a worse Seahawks team than you thought the previous week?
Or not only that the Seahawks are a lesser team than the 49ers. Like, did we all forget that was played in Santa Clara? Did we? Did that just happen? Did we all forget that the Niners were the ones that got very lucky in that game? I mean, it is very it should have been the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo threw 5 picks, not one. Like, I mean, he threw that many into coverage that should have been picked off.
Yeah.
Plus one that was called back on a ticky-tack call. That game should have been a blowout, but they got lucky.
Well, I know it gets tough in power rankings when you go, okay, well, obviously the 49ers can't be number one because they got beat. You had the Ravens who just beat the Patriots. It kind of makes sense to put them up there. Now you have this problem with the Saints of, well, the Seahawks, they lost to the Saints. but the Saints lost to the Falcons. So where exactly do you put the Saints and you know, where do you slot them in? It gets a little messy.
It doesn't. See, this would be very easy for me if I had to make one of these for the national audience, let's say. Now, if I was making it for the little flockers or our audience, it would always be Hawks number one and then everybody else. But if I had to make it for a national audience, this is how it would go. It would go Baltimore. It would go New England. It would go New Orleans. Then it would go Seattle. And then it would go Niners.
Okay.
Like, I mean, just because the Niners lost to the best team in the conference, you know, and barely, by the way, I would not like just have them have a precipitous fall.
Yeah.
And same way with New Orleans, they came out and laid an egg against Atlanta. I get it. But things happen. Like, there's wacky games in the league all year. That's one I can take and put into the, it was just a vortex that day, yeah, you know, for the Saints. And they did come into our house and beat us. So yes, I would probably do that. Now, at the end of the day, I honestly think we watched on that Monday Night Football game the two best teams in the conference. I really do.
Yeah, I could see that. And yeah, that's the weird thing, is looking at the Packers and having them up in there as well, because I think Prisco had the Packers at number four.
I take the Packers behind the Niners.
Oh, I would
too.
I think
the Niners are a better team.
I think the Packers deserve to be up near the top. But when you start looking at the quality of wins and the quality of losses, the Saints had one bad week against the Falcons, and they lost early on in the season, I think, to,
I don't know, it was an early season. Oh, it was to the Rams when Drew Brees got hurt.
Oh, right. Yeah. So yeah, they lost to a team with a winning record. The 49ers lost to a team with a winning record.
For now.
The Ravens, you could look at them and say, well, you did lose to the Browns, but they're, you know, a division rival, I suppose. The Packers, though, they've lost to Philly. And they've lost to the Chargers. So they've had two games. And Philly, you could call them, they're probably deserving of being, they're probably the best team in the East. That's going to be between them and the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. So, but to lose to the Chargers, to me, that puts you a little bit farther down on the list.
Yeah, that was a really ugly loss. They've been a joke for 2 years now, the Chargers. They have a lot of talent on that team, but it's just the fact that they don't have a home venue, like, yeah, I think is what makes it real tough for them. And then for the Packers to go down there and get beat, like, come on, man.
Especially when it's, you know, you have all those home fan, all those Packers fans inside the LA Chargers stadium.
And then not only that, but the Packers barely eke out a win against the one-dimensional Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, 24-16. Yeah, so I guess it was a touchdown, a two-point conversion ahead.
It was closer than that.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, Prisco's, who knows? Like, that's a ridiculous power rankings. I mean, I mean, you got to do it, I guess, if you're in his position, you know, make one. You're going to piss off somebody.
Well, but I just don't see how you can knock the Seahawks, how you can have them beating the undefeated team in the NFL and going, oh, yeah, I'm going to move them down in my power rankings. I saw more from six other teams that are better than them getting a win over the number one team in last week's power rankings.
How about the people that are putting Lamar Jackson over Russ in the MVP race at this point? How do you feel about that?
Oh, gosh. I think now it's just getting to the point to where Russell Wilson's been on top now for so much this season that they're like, oh, well, we've got to just start talking about some other guys.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think overall people are still on the Russ bandwagon when it comes to MVP, because the kind of the way that award has worked traditionally, like, it always seems to be like a guy's turn.
Yeah.
And it feels like with, you know, the Mahomes getting injured and Aaron Rodgers having some up and down moments, everybody's like, Russ has been in this convo for like 3-4 years now.
Well, yeah, like, go back to 2015 when he had an amazing season, but Cam had the undefeated, or was it not undefeated regular season, but it was like 14-2 or something crazy like that.
Yeah, or one loss. Yeah, it was. They had a great team success. Russ had a better season, even statistically overall, but everybody loves Cam. So,
well, and Cam had been in the league longer and they had the better record. And I think the Panthers even had a win over the Seahawks. So that was kind of the justification of, oh, well, it's Cam's turn.
Yeah, I think if the Seahawks finished something like 12-4, and Russ doesn't just like fall apart down the stretch, which he won't. I don't know how he doesn't get it, but because it's his turn. Now, do I think Lamar's having a dominant year? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
His style is definitely different than everybody else's, and it is phenomenal to watch. Now, them beating the Patriots, I am very curious to see how the playoffs go for the Ravens, especially if they have to go up against the Patriots again, just in the sense of this feels like one of those offenses that you see once and you get, you know, bum rushed by a little bit and you don't quite understand what to do. But I feel like the second time that you see it, teams are going to have better answers for it.
Yeah. And especially if that coach is Bill Belichick,
especially if it's Bill Belichick who single-handedly ruined the Rams and they're terrible now. Cause let's take a peek at the NFC West now.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. Since the Seahawks victory over the Niners, and look, we're half game back of the Niners. We both have difficult schedules going down the stretch. It could very well come down to that week 17 matchup, but I don't think it will. I think we're going to have like a 2-game lead by then. I feel like this Niners team is going to go through a little bit of a rough patch. Not saying that they're bad. I think they're probably the second best team in the conference, but I don't know that it's going to come down to the division in week 17. Now, the Cardinals are obviously out of it, and boy, that Rams team, they're cooked.
That Rams team lost to the Steelers. The Steelers team that we saw on Thursday night get beat 21-7 by a Browns team that's mediocre.
And that's being generous.
It is being generous. And so the Rams are seeming kind of mediocre, and they have to play the mediocre Bears up next. It's the mediocre bowl.
Yeah, the Rams are legit bad. They can't run the ball. Their offensive line is in complete shambles.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody anointed Sean McVay as the next offensive genius. And then, you know, the Bears kind of put out the blueprint on how to beat him last year. Then Bill Belichick takes the blueprint and then makes it a masterpiece that everybody can copy. And free agency hits and they lose some of the support for Jared Goff. Mainly offensive line help, you know, Todd Gurley's knee, and all of a sudden, Jared Goff is one of the worst quarterbacks in the league. Who would have thought all this could have come about? Who could have possibly predicted that this generation's Joe Flacco would start to show himself? I don't know who could have done that, but he has this.
There's probably no podcast episodes in the off season that would support anyone who may have thought such a thing.
Who would have thought such a thing? And that team has imploded. They are legitimately catfished for the next 5 years. They are, because that contract with Jared Goff.
Picks. They paid Jared Goff. They paid Todd Gurley. They paid Brandon Cooks
who career might be over.
Yeah, with the concussions, which sucks.
Yeah, I'm not rooting for that. Don't get me wrong. He could be done forever.
I mean, that's like a Sidney Rice type situation.
Yes. Yeah. Or even Wes Welker, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I never like to see that. Steve Young, same thing. But, I mean, it's just a fact of the matter.
It just adds to it. So you have the Rams, who could be donezo, if not this week, if they lose to the Bears, but then they have the Ravens the following week.
Yeah, what's the Rams finishing schedule here? Because I know we have them one more time.
We have them one more time. They play Arizona before they face us the next time.
Yeah. I wonder how that game will go against the Rams down at that neutral field.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Then they go. So after we play them on the neutral field in L.A., they go on the road to Dallas, then on the road to San Fran.
Loss.
And then they finish up at home against the Cardinals.
Possible win.
They haven't played the Cardinals yet this year. I'm interested to see how that first game at Arizona goes.
That could be feisty, man. I mean, we watched the Cardinals take the Niners to the brink the week before.
Yeah, division games, man.
I mean, I don't think that's a long-term. Again, I don't see that as being a long-term success offense, the Arizona Cardinals. But they're getting people who haven't seen them, you know? They're getting close and they're making it competitive. The Rams are legit screwed. And especially when you look at defense, You know, I mean, their linebackers are subpar. Then you look at their secondary. Sure, they traded for Ramsey. Cool. Except for that, the rest of their secondary is ancient. I mean, Eric Weddle's going to be gone in a hot minute. So is Tlaib.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't look good back there. And so what does that leave you? Aaron Donald and who? Fowler?
Fowler, yeah. Probably. That's about it.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. You want to swap those guys for... Yeah, we've seen what's happened to the Seahawks with... You can't pay everybody on the defense.
Right.
And especially when you start paying dudes on the offense. And they're going to, I think, go through that same type of issue of having too much youth on the offensive line because Whitworth is going to be gone.
Yeah. In 2 years, you got to deal with Cooper Kupp's contract, too.
Yeah.
Because he's on a rookie deal. What do you do with him? A guy who hasn't been the, you know, amazing light up the league receiver that everybody seemed to think he was. He's delightfully average.
By the time you have to pay Kupp, Gurley's contract will be off the books.
Maybe. Yeah. And they may move on from Goff by then too. You laugh.
It's possible.
Yeah. He hasn't been good for, I don't know, almost a full season now.
They took Goff off the field on third down and put Bortles out there for some play.
Yep. Yeah, that happened.
Yeah.
Jared Goff got taken off the field for Blake Bortles, people. That happened.
You pay a quarterback $30+ million and he's not on the field for a key third down.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine Russell Wilson not being out there on third down for anything?
Right. Can you imagine putting in Geno? Yeah. Who's an upgrade over Bortles, by the way?
Right.
Man, that team is in a world of hurt, and it feels so good. And they're going to be screwed for a long time.
It's going to be good. Well, fortunately, now we have the 49ers to fill in as the resident rival now. It's back.
It's true.
For now.
Again, I still wonder about the sustainability of that, too.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, what do you say we get to the second half of the show?
Yeah, it's probably due. But that was fun, man. I was waiting all week to do it. I wish I hadn't been driving, say, like 5,000 miles so that I could do it. I would have been back a day earlier, but I stopped early on Monday night to be sure that I could be somewhere to watch the game.
Well, that was worth it. Yeah, you needed to be there to watch that game because you still haven't watched that win over the Chiefs last year.
Nope, I still haven't. Seen a lot of the highlights. But yeah, this year's been tough. But right. Let's get to the second half of the show. And I imagine we have a little flocker or two that have joined up after that win. People had to be fired up. Yeah,
lots of little flockers. We'll get to it. Getting back into the second half of the show. And Adam, I know we are hesitant to wade into the political realm, but there's been some stuff going on this past week, and I have a little bit of a gripe that I have to get it off my chest.
Okay.
Can we retire the term the three amigos? Because I'm hearing that in the political commentary with regard
really?
To people within the president's administration. And I think when I hear the three amigos, I think of Chevy Chase, Steve Martin. Martin Short. And
yes.
And I don't want to have that ruined in my life.
I can get that. I mean, I thought you were going to go with the phrase quid pro quo. I never want to hear that again in my life either.
I could do without that too.
I don't know why. It just bothers me. Just the term itself. Like whether or not, like, I'm not saying anything about nothing, like, but just the term itself, I don't like, and I'm with you. Three amigos can only mean from here on out, we've declared it. Martin Short, Chevy Chase, and Steve Martin.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay.
All right. Agreed.
we can work out any political solutions on the show. I'm glad we're in agreement and we can move on.
We focus on the important things when it comes to the government. That's for sure. Yeah.
Well, another thing that's been kind of important to us is watching our Seahawks in prime time, and the NFL took away one of our prime time games this past week when the Seahawks Sunday night matchup against the Philadelphia Eagles was ripped from us. It moves to a 10 a.m. start time, and now we have to watch the 49ers and Packers in prime time.
Oh, well, whatever. This doesn't move the needle for me at all.
It bums me out a little. It just a little bit.
Really? Well, yeah. You should not be mad at the network, and you should not be mad at the league. You should be mad at the Philadelphia Eagles for somehow stinking in a division that stinks. Do better. Like, if the Eagles were better, it would still be a primetime game.
Yeah, if they're a little bit better. The thing that was surprising to me, now I know you can't move a Thursday game, you can't move a Monday game, those ones are solidified, but the fact that I thought it would at least move back to a 4 p.m. Eastern time, or, you know, the 1 p.m. Pacific time start, because that's where the Packers 49ers game was. It was in that 1 p.m. slot. And so it was weird to me that it went back to the earliest slot.
Yeah, and I guess that's a marker of the also weird decision of the NFL to really front load the games every week and everything's played at one time. To this day, I still don't understand that.
Why don't you even it out a little bit? Do people not like afternoon football or evening football if you're on the East Coast?
I'm going to go with no, because I think they do like it, because I don't know. A lot of people don't like to wake up first thing and just start watching football.
I like it when they have the London games, and I can really wake up and start watching football.
Yeah, I never watch London games, but I do enjoy having that's one thing that I have started to appreciate traveling as much as I do.
Yeah.
Is through all the time zones. We live in the Mountain time zone, which is the perfect time zone for football.
It is, because
it's absolutely butter. I love it. You wake up late.
Right.
Have a little late breakfast or brunch, you know, whatever your cup of tea is.
Yeah. The first game still starts in the morning, but not too early.
Yeah, it's great.
And then the evening games are over in time to go to bed. The East Coast, people on the East Coast have it terrible for the night games. Monday night football. How do you do it?
I don't know. And still show up to work the next day and not be a total zombie.
Right.
Yeah, I really appreciate our time zone a lot for football watching. It's perfect.
So there you go. If you are an NFL fan above all, move into the Mountain time zone.
It's going to make your life better. Can you imagine the folks that are like across the pond? Like, how tough that is for people?
Oh my gosh.
Or being in Australia? Yeah. Some of our little flockers have it way harder than the East Coast people. Don't give them any sympathy. Yeah. How about the people that have it real hard?
Oh, yeah, like Hong Kong Hawk and yeah, anybody in Australia. I mean, even the UK folks, they if it's a night game, holy smokes.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Well, we do have some new members of the flock, Adam, and I want to recognize Jesse Aney for coming back in with another one-time $36 donation. He emailed in a while back saying he was covering 2013, and so I'm only guessing now he's worked his way through 2014, giving $3 a month.
There we go. That's perfect. And look, you called it a one-time donation, but wouldn't now be a second-time donation?
It is a second-time donation. I just for people who go to SeahawkersPodcast.com/support and donate through PayPal, I just always in my head think of it as it's not necessarily a recurring. It's not a subscription,
right.
But you have to go through the act each once. each one of those times.
Each once times. Yes. Right.
It's totally perfect grammar. Don't call me out on it.
It don't make no never mind, Brandon.
Welcome to the flock to Chris Brubaker, who is in at 1212.
Ooh, yeah, I like the last name too. I wish I had like brew or beer, or, you know, something like that. My last name. Like we had a dude that came in and talked at our high school. He was like a recruiter for Arizona, like it was ITT Tech or something like that. You remember this guy? His name was literally Bud Weiser.
I don't remember that one, but one guy I do remember from one of my Navy trainings was a guy named Richard Dick.
So, was he literally like Dick Dick?
Literally, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I think at that point you have to go with like Rich Dick.
Maybe. Or you just change your first name. Go by your middle name.
Yeah. Well, what if his middle name is Peter?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dick Peter Dick.
Yeah.
Rich Peter Dick?
Peter Johnson.
Rich Peter. What if he has a hyphenated last name? Rich Peter Dick Johnson.
That would be... what is it after a turkey in bowling? What's the fourth one?
I don't know, but it should be a Rich Peter Dick Johnson.
Eric Lindeen, welcome to the flock at $3.
Yeah, I bet you they might want to take their $3 back after that last little change.
I'm sorry, I had no good transition to go into Eric's welcome to the flock, but he does email in and says, okay, I'm done being a freeloader. I've finally got in the flock. It's hard to be a Seahawks fan living in Minnesota, and this podcast is one of the things I look forward to most each week. So I knew it was time. Thanks, Adam and Brandon, for always being entertaining and informative. I can't wait to hear what you have to say after that wild and crazy Monday night football game.
Catfish!
The 49ers.
Catfish!
The Rams.
Catfish!
The Cardinals. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks, Eric. And I really appreciate it, man. You know, I did want to say on this episode that I'm going to give the freeloaders, all those who are freeloading out there, a little less crap. Because honestly, this season, I've watched the least amount of football over the last, you know, this season than I have over the last 5 years. Just hasn't been able to happen. I've been so busy, still on the road. My job occurs on the weekend. I've never traveled this much in my life, and I've not been able to put in the kind of time and effort I would prefer to in this show, let alone even be able to record it on a regular day. So, you know, if you're freeloading a little bit, I get it, because I've been kind of coasting too. So it's fine.
Well, and for those who do support the show too, I'm thankful for the amount of grace that we get for the flexibility that we've been on the days that we record.
Yeah, for sure. It's certainly appreciated by myself.
Welcome to the flock to, oh, hey, this might be Jerron Brown. We might have an actual player on the team. Jay Brown, $81.99. Welcome to the flock in at $5.
Wow. So welcome, Jerron Brown. Would like to see you get a little more playing time.
Sorry you got a healthy scratch this last game.
I'm sorry they signed Josh Gordon.
Welcome to the flock to Thomas Shangarathil.
That was a nice effort. We're going to go with Thomas C.
I'm sorry, Thomas. Thomas C. In at $5. Welcome to the flock to Thomas.
You think that's the first time that's happened to poor Thomas?
When you have more than 8 letters in your last name, I think it's just, you know, throwing darts at a dartboard, whether you get it right or not.
Look, any last name that has more than 3 consonants in a row, you're kind of just screwed.
Welcome to the flock to Roy McBoy Bacaleri. Roy has a last name that is more than 8 letters, but it flows a little. Some of those consonants are doubled up. And Roy says, Brandon and Adam, you guys are great. I've been freeloading for a few months, but I figured it was time to throw down and join the flock. Hands down, the best Seahawks podcast out there. The Brandon and Adam combo is like Russ and Lockett. I'll let you decide which one of you is Russ. I'm in the car most of the day, and listening to you guys helps me get through the day. Go Hawks!
Catfish!
The Rams, and oh yeah,
catfish!
The 49ers too. Also, Adam, your voice makes me laugh in a good way.
When I first saw it, my eyes kind of glossed over, you know, like how you kind of read something quickly. Uh-huh. And I thought it said Roy McAvoy. And then I got excited because I thought Tin Cup was literally now a little flocker. But close enough for me, I'm taking the win. Thanks, Roy.
One of the greatest golf movies of all time.
One of the greatest movies of all time. Great soundtrack.
I need to go back and watch that.
Rene Russo's killer.
Yeah, yeah.
Cheech Marin is amazing.
Cheech Marin is amazing.
Even Don Johnson puts in a solid performance. And, you know, the lefty, Phil Mickelson, comes through with a nice little cameo. So does Stadler, the walrus. Like, he has a nice little cameo.
The first time I watched that movie, though, I just, and spoiler alert, take a drop. Take a drop.
No, no. Because everybody will remember you're 12.
I know. After reflecting on it more, I'm glad that he went for it again and again.
Failure courts greatness, Romeo. Failure courts greatness.
Well, those of you who are appreciating the greatness of this show and giving us 5-star reviews these past couple weeks, thanks to BJ Pester, who gave us a review, said, let's go. This is such a good podcast. And then he says, when will the Field Goals podcast go back to the Seahawkers podcast? And I was a little bit confused.
Oh, well, I think because of you doing a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I can understand how there'd be some confusion there.
Does he want me to do it full time on just this feed?
Well, what I think he was saying was, when will the Seahawkers podcast be the Field Goals podcast again?
Oh. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because he doesn't like you alone. He likes it when we're together.
That's true. And, yeah. You know,
it's like PB&J, dude.
Hey, if you and I could be together 5 days a week, we would do this show 5 days a week.
Oh, without question, dude. Yeah, if I could do this show 5 days a week rather than grind wheels all over the country, I would do it in a heartbeat. Yes, yeah. Yes.
If I could retire from my job and just podcast every single day, it would be the best life ever.
Yeah, you would be living your best life. Yes.
Review says, best podcast out there. I stumbled on this podcast a few weeks back, and now I eagerly await the next update each week. Being a Montana man myself,
hey!
I love the Will Disley support. Heal quickly. We have a deep playoff run to make. And all of the Seahawks insight. I'm happy to bring my lifelong Seahawks pride down to my new home in Phoenix, where I can represent the blue and green in enemy territory. You guys do a great job of breaking down the games and all the Seahawks goodness each week. I'm looking forward to seeing our Hawks pound the rock as we power our way to getting another chip this year. Keep up the great work and go Hawks.
Hey, go Hawks, man. I appreciate that from a fellow Montanan. That always makes me feel good. And that's kind of a tough break having to live down in Phoenix.
I don't know. I'm getting to the age now where I kind of like the
Stop
idea.
It.
I'm serious. I'm kind of liking the idea of doing like 50-50.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could totally see myself living February and March somewhere nicer.
And even December,
terms
January.
Of temperature.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, December, January is fine because that's the beginning of winter. The snow's new. It feels fun. You get out. It's the doldrums.
Yeah,
February
when it
gets and
March.
Gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, it kind of starts to melt, but not really. It's still just cold and it's muddy.
Yeah, that is pretty gross. Yeah.
Yeah, my birthday's in March, and it's probably my least favorite month.
Last review, and hey, this is something we've been talking about. And this review says, it would be nice if these guys just gave up everyday life and released a 12-hour daily podcast. Get to work, fellas.
On it. And I think he hit the nail on the head with 12 hours. And I don't think that was an accident.
Not an accident. No. 12 hours, though. That would be marathon sessions.
That's more of me than anybody wants. Just ask my girlfriend.
What does she say about that? Let's get her in here.
I think she appreciates sleeping so she doesn't have to, like, engage, you know?
Maybe I took that the wrong way.
Oh, yeah, I think you did. I mean, because if they're... I can't even go 12 minutes. What are you talking about? I'm 40. 12 hours. Get out of here.
Okay.
What do you think? Who do you think I am? You think I'm Rich Peter Dick Johnson?
That guy can go for 12 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. Comment in here from Scott Mulholland said, what a game. Although I questioned some of the 49ers cornerbacks' physical coverage on the passes, I'm glad the refs let the players play because that allowed Clowney to lay the wood on Jimmy G on the first couple drives. The first couple hits set the tone, and Garoppolo had happy feet the rest of the night. What a game to see in person. That was an intense white-knuckle ride. I had a
catfish
eating grin walking out amongst quiet San Francisco season ticket holders after Meyer's field goal. What a night.
Dude, that's cool you got to be there live and in person. I bet you that felt amazing watching those sad sack fans like walk out of the stadium.
Oh, that couldn't have been any better. With all of the full stadium, and everybody stayed for the full 70 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I wonder if he went by the Go Hawks brick that's in Levi's Stadium.
Yeah. The I forgot about the Go Hawks brick. But,
I never forget about that. That is gold.
That is gold. That all the fans chipped in on.
Yeah.
Also got an email from Dupre, says, good day, Brandon. I have a do better. I ordered a Seahawks jersey on October 24th. The jersey left Salt Lake, then back to Long Beach, California, then to Brussels, Belgium. This is how the billion-dollar enterprise called the NFL sends a single jersey to Bermuda. The jersey actually flew past my country to Europe. I guess I'll never receive my jersey in time for my trip to Philadelphia to watch my Hawks against the Eagles. Do better, NFL shop.
God, I guess. Like, you just miss him by a whole continent?
Here's the crazy thing, though. So Dupre wasn't the only one who emailed this same week about this global landmark shipping company screwing up. We had one of our listeners in Germany, Henrik Will, also emailed in complaining about how his jersey got lost on the way to Germany.
How boy, man, there's some incompetency going on there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and Dupre asks, is it safe to wear a Seahawks jersey in Philadelphia?
Of course. Just be ready to duck at any given moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I would feel...
I mean,
there are some cool Philadelphia Eagles fans.
For sure, for sure. But then there's also the ones that throw batteries at Santa. So yeah. There's that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying, the Global Landmark may have done you a favor.
Yeah.
And we got an email from the Bard.
Oh, are you ready? Do you have the pipes warmed up?
I'm working on it.
Okay. All right. Let's see what John had to say.
Hello, fellas. Wow. Just wow. Where do I start? I had a feeling we were going to win it, but it shredded my nerves. I loved Russell Wilson. I loved Hollister for showing big balls. And I loved the O-line when we rushed for a TD, pushing their front four all over. But the very best bit was Jimmy G.
Catfish!
Hitting his pants when Clowney was about. I told Barry to pick them because this was a 4-12 team last year with not a lot of clutch or playoff experience, and we had only beaten two teams with a winning record this year, but he wouldn't have it. They were playing a team with vast experience of these situations over the last few years. This is also a great time to go into the bye week and rest and heal up because there are difficult games to come, but we have set a marker down. After sitting through this and screaming at the TV, I need a bye week too. I hope Handsome Jimmy sleeps badly and sees Clowney coming for him in his dreams and is mentally scarred along with his
catfish
pants. Need to lie down now. Go Hawks. John the Bard Davidson.
I don't know if I want to catfish those out. That was I kind of like the Bard with the S bombs.
Yeah, that was fun. And look, I kind of hope that that's how John starts talking just in daily life to like everybody, like Barry and all his coworkers, like everybody. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. But yeah, I understand why he felt kind of fried after that game, you know, just holy smokes, man. That was an emotional roller coaster, no doubt about it. Yeah, it was fun to watch Jimmy G.
Catfish!
In his pants.
It was fun. And we've got more emails, Adam. I know we want to get to our Do Better and Better at Life, but we had so many emails come back
this
week. Yeah. And so many good ones, like this one from Matt Donato says, hey, guys, first of all, thank you so much for the premium content all year / season. For the last 4 years, my absolute favorite thing about the fall has been having my Seahawkers podcast on long drives home from work. Some people have their pumpkin-flavored coffees or their apple cider donuts, but not me. I've got my
catfish
King Seahawkers podcast, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So I really can't thank you enough. Although, Adam, I'm pretty sure I could literally hear you eating a sandwich in the background a few pods ago. Do better. Anyway.
Yeah, that happened. I was hungry. It was jerky. Whatever.
It's true. I tried to cut as much of it out as I could, but apparently I missed some.
Apparently I was really hungry.
Anyway, after this roller coaster of a Monday night game, I just couldn't get my fill of Seahawks news. I listened to the field goals recap, kept refreshing my Spotify all day long to see if you two had done a quick reaction show. No pressure. Scanned Instagram and Google. Just couldn't get enough. This is when I made a huge mistake. I chose to listen to the CBS Sports Pick 6 NFL podcast. Now, I don't know if you've ever listened to these guys, but I found myself literally yelling at my car stereo after just a few minutes of their recap and analysis of the game. So much flip-flopping, back and forth, and genuinely not paying attention to what was actually going on during the game. On top of these dummies, all I saw online today was how, quote, Russ got lucky, he didn't even play that well, or quote, what about that INT he threw in overtime, or quote, there's no way the Seahawks defense can repeat their dominance down the stretch. There's so many haters out there who just look at yards and stats without looking at W's and the content of what extends plays and constitutes a well-rounded performance of all three phases of the game. All I can say is that you can tell who is actually watching the games and giving real constructive criticism and who is faking it to sound cool. The amount of honesty and effort you both put into the content of this podcast is incredible. And us Flockers, thank you for doing a great job week in and week out, despite tech issues, travel, work, and your personal lives. Once again, can't thank you enough. Looking forward to this week's episode and more Seahawks football. Go Hawks and
catfish
the 49ers. Love, Matt.
Yeah, screw the Niners. Appreciate it, Matt, a ton. It was frustrating watching and listening to some of the national stories and stuff that came out. In fact, I was driving on Tuesday and with a long drive across Oklahoma in eastern Colorado, I would have loved to have, some Seahawks talk, just because it's still pumped up from the win and all that. Really not that much out there. When I finally did listen to Around the NFL, it took 7.5 minutes for them to get to the game. We were talking about coaches who are on the hot seat before then. We're talking about all sorts of other stuff. Then they get to the game and it starts out much like Matt was kind of complaining about, just weak analysis. It was pathetic. And I turned it off and I was just so frustrated. And I just felt like there wasn't a lot of great content out there. Like, for example, listening to the Talking Head shows a little bit, getting the YouTube clips and stuff. And
oh yeah.
The only thing they talked about was Russell Wilson being an MVP candidate, which is great. And that's nice. Like, I'm happy for that. But how about a little more about Clowney? How about a little bit about Quandre Diggs and McDougal? How about that defense as a whole?
You're not going to get anything about Quandre Diggs out there about after
no,
that game.
No, it was barely mentioned that he started, like in the broadcast.
Yeah.
So it just, I understand Matt's frustration is all I'm getting at.
And don't lie, you would not have, because you make a point of not listening to any other Seahawks content out there so that your feelings about the game aren't clouded by other opinions.
I try really hard to always do the show before I really listen or read a lot of the national narrative. There might be, like, occasionally I'll get a little bit of Cowherd before, but that's about it. Like, usually, like you said, want to keep my perspective at the very least, mine. And I was very disappointed.
Corey Kuhlman also came in. This is the last one before we get into Do Better and Better at Life. Says, hey guys, thank you for the great content and laughs from time to time. Two thoughts though. The first is more of a question. Do we miss Cassius Marsh right now? Who we cut prior to the start of the season? Great long distance defender that is quick and twitchy, knew our system. I say this in Loom to Ziggy not panning out well. Is still too injured and not at playing weight. He needed another year to be fully healthy. Second thought, I miss fullbacks and Max Strongs and Mike Robbs of the world. Vital instruments for Alexander and Lynch, respectively, picking up blitzes and an extra dump off for Russ. We're 8-2 and the defense felt like that's what it's like to play a great team and play to their potential. Go Hawks.
Yeah, go Hawks, man. I do appreciate the defense's effort in this game. And it did, and we've said it a couple times, it felt like kind of that turning that corner, hopefully. Yes, some of the national media said, well, I'm not sure if the Seahawks can string that sort of level of defense together going down the stretch. And I don't either. I really don't. I mean, I need to see some more of it. I'm certainly hopeful.
Yeah.
And, maybe Clowney can really make that push going down the stretch, and especially since he's playing for another contract, his next one. And hopefully, I'm pro re-signing Clowney. He's only 26. He is a game wrecker. I'd love to have him long term.
Yeah, and they do have to wait till the end of the season. I know a lot of people are saying after that game, sign him right now. Give him what he wants.
Can't.
And we can't. We do have to wait till the end of the season. But they'll be first in line. Now the Seahawks know that he fits into the system. It's a lot different than just picking up a guy who is a free agent that a team decided to let go to free agency.
Right. Yeah, for sure. You kind of got that trial period. Get your feet wet with him, see how he is. And he seems to fit in well with the locker room, too. I mean, guys seem to really like him and rally around him as well. And, if you look at the future of the team, if you have Clowney up front, Bobby is your middle linebacker, and then Diggs and Shaq in the back end. Man, that's a hell of a future.
I like it. Well, I said that was the last email, but you know what? There's one
you
other
one. Want to sneak another one in? All right, let's do it. It was a big week. Come on.
It was a big week. Want to get everybody in. Ethan in Greensboro, he says, hey, what's up, Adam? And the other guy. Just kidding, Brandon. I know who you are, too. I just had to make up for someone calling Adam the other guy last week.
I appreciate that.
But anyway, I am so sick of the national media saying the Niners would have won if Kittle and Sanders were healthy. But the best tight end in the NFL, Will Disley, has been out for weeks, and Tyler Lockett was out in the fourth quarter in OT. Keep up the great work, guys. Go Hawks. P.S.
Catfish!
Niners fans, sincerely, Ethan.
Well, if you just had George Kittle, it's so sad for them. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit and the whininess of it all. Yeah, what a joke. And yeah, it didn't matter that Russ has been missing Will, you know, Uncle Will for the last few weeks. It didn't matter that he was still, you know, missing Luke Wilson. It doesn't matter that he ended up missing Tyler Lockett because he just makes everybody better. He doesn't make up excuses like everybody wants to for Handsome Jimmy.
It did feel different without Lockett out there, though.
It did, but we still got it done. Russ still got it done. And not only that, but like, when was it that Lockett got hurt? Like, all of a sudden he was hurt. Didn't he take the opening kickoff of OT in the end zone?
No, it wasn't the opening kickoff. It was Travis Homer that was back there, because that's the point that I noticed it, because I saw Homer back there. I'm like, what's he doing out there?
He received a kick late in the fourth quarter.
He did. Yeah, he was out there. Didn't I think bring he it was out there for the Seahawks go ahead field goal drive.
Right. And then all of a sudden he's out and, like, you know, people are wondering if he's going to need a leg amputation.
Yeah, I'm glad he's okay.
Yeah, he's okay. Sounds like he'll be back for Philly. Even if he's not, that's okay. Take an extra week. But yeah, hopefully just like they said, kind of a bad bruise and moving on.
Paul in Cumbria, this one just came in, says, holy catfish, Monday Night Football was incredible. I was still in shock all day Tuesday. Great to see Jaron Reed making an impact and Clowney finally getting rewarded with a touchdown for his work over the season. Despite the fumble, you gotta love DK's fighting spirit and yards after contact. And although I could barely watch through overtime, I know there is always one thing that we can count on, in Russell we trust. I need the bye week to recover. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks, man. I'm with you. It, you know, and it's kind of ironic. The one weekend I get to stay home this weekend because I canceled my job today. I thought I was going to have to fly today.
Yeah. And no football.
I was like, oh, I get a Sunday to sit at home and watch football. That's happened one other time this season. And I don't even get to watch, you know, the Hawks. It's the bye week.
You get to take. Well, see, this is going to give you a break from any kind of rooting interest, right? Because now you actually get to kind of relax and watch football, because there is no relaxing when watching Seahawks football this season.
No, or ever under this iteration of the Seahawks. Like, it's always close. And they don't play in the first and third quarter. They only play in the second and fourth.
Yeah.
Just how it is.
Not good.
It'll be a nice relaxing day of football at home. I am looking forward to that and getting a better pulse on the league.
Hey, and before we get to Do Better and Better Life, congrats to Playoff Bound. Just Lock It In. Got the win with 10 points in the pick'em this last week.
Damn. Well, congratulations. That's better than my zero. I haven't gotten my picks in the last 2 weeks. It just hasn't happened.
Well, you are falling farther and farther down. I am at number 37 overall, Adam.
Yeah, whatever, show off. I just didn't care this year. I decided to back it.
Especially after I started whooping you by, you know, week 7.
Oh, whatever. I it hasn't been a whooping up to that point.
It's pretty much been a whooping.
Oh, you can say what you want.
Congrats to F the Rams, who is leading overall at 93 points. Moore Wright at 92, along with 3 Seagulls and a chip. Seahawks MX and 3 for MVP, along with Minnesota at 92 points. So those are your leaders overall right now with 93 and 92 points.
I admire their consistency.
And I also admire the name Grabbing Loose Balls. That's one of my favorite names in the top 10.
That's a solid one. Because you can't have the balls loose.
And if they are, you have to grab them.
Yeah, you have to corral the balls.
On to Do Better and Better at Life.
All right, man. What you got for Do Better?
My Do Better this week. I think it's time, Adam, I think it's time that we picked a new Huckleberry on this show. I know we got after Pete Prisco with his power rankings, mm-hmm. but it's hard knowing that he's now on board the Russell Wilson train.
Right.
It's hard to go after him. You know, Skip Bayless, you know, we have the segment. But I think I found someone new, and that someone showed himself on First Take with Stephen A. Smith, and it's Max Kellerman.
Last night's game proved that the San Francisco 49ers are the best team in the world. That's what it proved in the loss. Now, I predicted they would lose this game. It was a game I felt could have gone either way. I was on the fence for a while, but in the end, I thought Niners aren't going to go undefeated. And Russell Wilson is having an MVP year. And when it comes down to it, he'll make the play that wins the game. And in fact, that's what happened.
Now, I know on First Take, they have to have, you know, opposing viewpoints to make it interesting. Mm-hmm. But how do you take that and try and spin the idea that even though you predicted a team to lose and then they lost, but you mm-hmm. still think that they're the best team in the NFL? How do you make that work in your mind and say it with authority?
I don't know how you're confused by this, Brandon, because the Golden State Warriors have the worst record in the league this year and lost KD in free agency, Steph to injury, Klay to injury. They still have Dre, but point being is they are still the best team in the NBA. Mark it down. I predicted this season would be a terrible season for them, but this is all going to work out in the end as a wash. They're the best team in the NBA. Mark it down. See, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. You just say it like that.
Let's see if that matches up pretty similar to how he goes on in this particular clip.
The Niners, without their best pass catcher, without their second best pass catcher, with guys dropping balls all over the place, still should have won the game. The field goal kicker should have hit that field goal. That's a very makeable, and he didn't come close, never had a real shot on it, as it turns out. And even with all that, it takes Russell Wilson heroics in overtime to beat them. What that tells me that the Niners defense is ferocious. We know it. Garoppolo played well enough to win most games, just not wrong. Against the MVP. Down weapons in overtime. That, if you're going to lose a home game, that's how you lose it, to one of the hottest teams in the NFL, led by an MVP with, let's face it, a bunch of bad breaks. They should have won that game.
A bunch of bad breaks, like Jimmy Garoppolo nearly throwing 5 picks and having Seahawks defenders drop it, getting all kinds of help from the refs in this game, like the in-the-grasp sack. And then when Russell Wilson was actually in the grasp, they let it play out, and he fumbles the ball into Effetti's arms, who also fumbles it. All of those breaks, and you still think the 49ers, that you still think that what you saw on Monday night against the Seattle Seahawks was the best team in the NFL? Max Kellerman, do better.
Wow. Yeah, that is an interesting take. I understand that if I had to do that job 5 days a week, 200 days a year, however many days he does it, you know,
if you were getting paid for that to be your job and to come up with something that was different from what Stephen A. was saying, and he already had the correct take, and right. that's what you had to do to make your check that week. Okay.
Yeah. Well, like you said, like I tried to demonstrate for you, you just have to say something with enough authority and then people think you believe it.
Well done. So for Max, Max is on my radar now. Now that now that Bayless has kind of fallen to the wayside, now that Pete Prisco's, Max is on my radar.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's about time for him. Absolutely.
Who do you got for do better?
All right, man. My do better this week is not for a specific person per se, but it's more an idea. And I came up with this over the last about, 3 minutes as I see something pop up here on Bleacher Report. And it was a tweet from Bleacher Report saying, quote, Mason Rudolph won't take legal action against Myles Garrett after last night's fight.
Okay.
What in the hell? How was that ever even a consideration? We really thought that was some sort of legal crime that was committed on the field. Like, this is one thing that was really crazy to me driving through the South over this last couple of weeks. Number one, the amount of billboards for lawyers everywhere. Some old white dude on a billboard with a 1 to 2 word billboard with a question mark behind it. Like, accident? Call this guy. Hurt at work? Question mark. Motorcycle wreck? Question mark. Like, everything was about going and suing somebody. We met a dude in a parking lot at the Holiday Inn as I was out sitting smoking a cigar. He comes up, we start chit-chatting, and his car's parked right next to him. He's like, man, I got this in a motorcycle wreck. And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, you know, I got in a wreck, and then I got a lawyer, and then I got this money, and I was able to buy this car, this Honda Civic. It was a nice Civic, don't get me wrong, it was brand new. But the idea that everything is sue-worthy, that we have to be so litigious, is absolutely ridiculous. I hate it. It is disgusting, and it's a real problem in this country. And the idea that this was even thought about for a second, that Mason Rudolph would have pressed charges for getting thumped in the head with his own helmet, is a joke show. America, do better.
That reminds me, you know, I was getting pizza last night, and I was in the drive-through pickup lane. And I was getting frustrated because the dude in front of me had been there for like 15 minutes at the pickup window.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to walk in. I was in my pajamas. I was like, I'm not going to walk in the Pizza Hut in my pajamas. But it was just, I had waited too long. And so I'm like, screw it. I'm going to. And so I backed up, and all of a sudden I'm just about to move forward, and I feel like I hit the curb. I'm like, oh, that's weird. And I look back in my rearview mirror, and one of the Pizza Hut delivery guys had parked in the lane where cars would normally drive, not in the parking spots.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh crap. You know, so I get out of the car, I look, and I'm like, ooh.
Oh, so you bumped into him?
Yeah, I bumped into him.
Oh.
And the other driver saw it, and he's like, oh, I'll go get him. And he came out, and his tail light was cracked, and it's kind of an older car, so I didn't know what I had actually done in terms of any damage.
If that had been there before, right.
If it had been there or not, I'm like, dude, I don't know if I did this. Or he's like, no, I think you hit a little bit lower, but there wasn't any damage to my bumper. He's like, I don't see anything wrong. He's like, it's fine. And so a really cool dude. And it reminded me of that when you brought that up.
Yeah. I mean, people are so quick to try to like get a cheap buck off of somebody else.
Yeah. I'm like, do you want me to give you my number just in case, you know, because it was dark out, you know, if you see something tomorrow, you know, you can just let me know, you know, give you my number to text me. He's like, no, dude, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I similar experience with a dude picking up my daughter from school, and we both backed out of parking spots simultaneously.
Ooh, yeah.
And when I looked up and started backing up and then checked my other mirror as I was backing up, he wasn't there. Same for him.
Yeah.
And bing, you know, who knows whose fault it is, like, whatever. But he had an older Pathfinder, and it broke off a little plastic piece on his bumper.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you okay, man? He's like, yeah, I'm fine. I was like, you know, like, it looks like that broke. And he's like, oh, yeah. And I was like, well, I can get you the insurance, whatever it is you need, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's like, let's not do any of that. And I was like, I don't know, does $100 cover it for you? And he's like, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Boom, done and done.
Well, and that's the thing with insurance too. Like, you're probably going to end up having to pay a deductible anyway, and that's going to cost $1,500. And yeah.
So that's a joke. The idea anybody thought Mason Rudolph was going to press charges.
Yeah, I didn't think that. Although, you know, it does go down as probably worse than the Haynesworth stomping, right? You put it above that? You don't put it above that?
Not even close.
Really? Okay.
Dude, I had heard about this incident, and I was like, holy crap, what happened? And then I watched it, and they go to the ground, and Mason Rudolph is like trying to rip Miles Garrett's helmet off.
Yeah.
Like, why they're going to the ground. And then they get up, and the helmet gets ripped off of Mason Rudolph, and he swings it at him, and he barely glances it off the side of his head.
It
hit harder in the mug by that chick in New Orleans with her bottle of booze than Mason Rudolph got hit in the head with that helmet.
Okay. I just don't need to. After Mason Rudolph got concussed early this season, I don't need to see any more headshots for Mason Rudolph.
No, I would say the Haynesworth stomp, way worse. Some of Sue's stomps, way worse. Take any perfect play, worse than that. Like, no, this is not even ranking my top 10.
Oh, okay. So is the rest of the season too much for you?
For Garrett?
For suspension?
oh, well, they're not going anywhere anyways. And like, honestly, keep, you know, just get your game checks, Miles, and, you know, take the rest of the season off. Call it good. Like, I get why they do it for the rest of the season, because you can't have that. You can't have guys, you know, going around like trying to, you know, hit dudes with their, you know, their helmet, swinging it around.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you got to make a statement. I understand that. But in actuality, like, you know, the head stomp, like by Haynesworth, that's way worse.
Okay. At first, I was a little bit, because I had only seen the clip, you know, of him getting the hit in the head, and I wasn't quite sure why Pouncey got the games, but I guess he did come in at the end and start clobbering Garrett while he was on the ground.
I don't know why Mason Rudolph doesn't get any games.
I thought he should at least get a game, right? Because he was... I'm kind of curious of why Garrett reacted like that. Had Rudolph been wearing him out like through the game or something?
I don't know. Division rivalry. People get upset. Their season hasn't gone well. His season hasn't gone the way he wants to personally. You know, you hate the Steelers. I get it. But like guys, just certain guys get under your skin. Maybe Rudolph had been chirping at him all day.
That's what I wonder. How much has he been chirping at him?
And then not only that, but then Rudolph tries to like jerk his helmet off of his head.
Oh, yeah.
And bulldogs him while they're going to the ground. Like, and a switch just flipped. He just lost his temper.
Yeah. Well, that was a
heck
of a switch.
Which isn't an excuse. You can't do that crap. But right. Yeah, I mean, I thought the whole thing was blown a bit out of proportion.
Well, yeah, it wasn't.
Like, I would take Woodson's hit on T.O. at the Star. That was worse than this.
Oh, you rank that above. Interesting.
Yeah, man.
I don't know. It taking off a dude's, ripping off a dude's helmet and hitting him with his own helmet.
It's not like he, I don't know. It wasn't even that clean of a hit.
It was pretty clean though. Initially I thought the same as you especially from the angle that I saw, but there's another angle and some still photos where he connects pretty good on the top of his dome.
I don't know. I can take a bottle of booze to the jaw and not be a crybaby about it. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe you deserve to be better at life.
No, but I know who does.
I'll give you mine.
Oh, well, fine then.
Unless you're really jonesing to go.
No, well, I don't know. Yeah, go ahead. By all means, go on with your better at life, kind sir.
My better at life this week is for the Seattle Sounders. Getting another championship for Seattle fans, a record crowd at CenturyLink Field. What a cool opportunity for all of my Seattle friends out there who cheer on the Sounders year in, year out. And I got to see a lot of them with their reaction videos who were there to see it live. Big celebration. It's weird seeing CenturyLink just rocking and it not being an NFL game. It was a little bit weird to me.
I wasn't even aware this game was happening.
Come on.
I'm dead serious.
I, you know what? I know that you are, but there are a lot of people who dabble in the soccer fandom, the other football, and now for them, they have their own Seattle championship, and so for the Seattle Sounders, we're bringing home the win. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, no, that's really cool, and you know, congratulations to them. Just not for me.
Yeah, hey, we understand your gripes.
Okay. You know who I don't have to gripe about?
Who's that?
The man who, for me, is better at life than Skip Bayless this week.
Who's that?
Ken Norton Jr.
Yeah.
That's right, our defensive coordinator. Let's give him some love since the national media won't. All they want to focus on is Handsome Sala. But how about the hitter? The man, the guy who is orchestrating this Seahawks defense, Ken Norton Jr., bringing this team together at a critical moment. This was the time this defense needed to show up, especially with the way the offense performed as a whole. And in a big moment, when we needed it the most, so that we can crow about how crappy the Niners are and feel good about our win beating them in their so-called home stadium, you know, where the fans sometimes show up. It brings a lot of joy to my life. And I love Ken Norton for showing up when he did and bringing this defense together when he did and making the adjustments quickly in that game to allow everything to happen. Ken Norton Jr., better at life than Skip Bayless.
I love it. Yeah, I've been enjoying this week so much. And whether it's just hearing the 49ers fans, especially going into this game, they were so confident that here we are, we're unbeaten, and this is our year, and you know, we're the dominant team now in the West. And this we get to say now for the next couple of weeks, no, not so much.
No. And guess what, Niner fan? You haven't been the dominant team in the West since we showed up in your division.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Catfish.
The Niners too.
And Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself.
What is that? I saw that scrawled on a bathroom wall the other day. Why is this a thing now? And who cares?
Yeah, it's because everybody knows.
Am I supposed to put on a tinfoil hat or something?
Maybe.
Oh, okay. Well, we should start a new one. Like, JFK didn't kill himself.
Well, that one's obvious.
Hot take.
No, the hot take would be JFK fired the magic bullet.
Ooh. Or the hotter take would be Oswald and Kennedy were in on it together, and they fired simultaneously.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. There it is. Hashtag Oswald and Kennedy were in on it together / conspiracy theory.
Pound sign.
.com.